Welcome to Let Thurgood Play, a podcast that explores and highlights Black musicians in the Northwest. I'm your host, Niles Green. To kick off the first episode, I spoke with a band called the Black Tones. They're a two-piece rock band started by Evie Walker, who plays guitar and is the lead vocalist, and her brother, Cedric Walker, on drums. They've been in the local circuit for a while and have played everywhere in Seattle. Music critics praise them for their songs and stage presence. Let's kick off the show. Like, you have any fun child of stories?
Probably, but me and Cedric have so many memories together.
I know, like,
it's all like, yeah.
You have like, two different categories, all those.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, stop that. Like, my mom was very successful in her career. Everyone in our family, like, that's raised us, helped raise us, have master's degrees. It's just kind of like, but that's like invisible. They just want to see us as either like extremely poor or like I said, like some kind of rich pop star. But there is a Black middle class. And although in the middle, and it's thinning out because the middle class in general is thinning out. I mean, there's a reason that we have still been able to afford to live in Seattle as Black people. And like, of course, Seattle has its racism and it has its challenges, of course. And sometimes it disguises itself with using this word liberal, when it could be just as bad or even worse as the South. We talk about, like, the South is so horrible and blah, 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 but that's just because it's in your face, whereas in the Northwest and just in the North in general, it's more just kind of like, okay, like,
It's passive. It's passive aggressive.
It's passive, yeah, and they hide behind this liberal world, and they, like, and there are people very much so who are POC that have been pushed out because they want to, like, prioritize, like, having white families. But, like, all that stuff has happened. It's true. It's just it's not the, like, entire story. Because I'm sure there's Blacks from different states who were brought up here from Amazon as well or brought up here for Boeing as well, like my grandpa was.
How do you guys then manage your band schedule then, knowing that you guys both have, like, almost two completely different schedules?
It does help that I'm doing this with Eva. I will say that is a perk because everything is very, you know, as Eva would say in the past, like, there's no beating around the bush when it's time for her and I to talk about music and stuff like that, like, to kind of get straight to the point. Like, we're very protective, you know, like, and I think that's a sibling thing from my perspective.
And what are some of the challenges you've experienced since you're Black rockers in a genre that's dominated by white performers?
I'm sure there's challenges there, but people like us a lot. I mean, I guess the only, like, quote-unquote challenge is that, you know, it took a while for people to call us a rock band.
Yeah, exactly.
They wanted to say, like, funk and soul and everything else, but it's not like we have to drink from the color of water fountains, you know? It's not like that.
Can you spend more on
terrible.
That point that they want to brand you as, like, a soul or funk band?
Yeah, I've had people, like, misgenre us. And I'm like, no, it's not funk, or no, it's not R&B, no, it's not soul, it's literally just rock and roll. So people will just, like, do that because they see it's like, oh, they're all Black musicians. And I bring this up quite a bit because I thought it was a really good point, but my fiancé interviewed George Clinton, and George Clinton said that one of the things he said was that white radio stations wouldn't play his music because they wouldn't play Black rock bands, so they had to kind of reclassify themselves, and that's where, like, the funk started. But you hear Funkadelic, yeah, you hear some funk, but they're very much so a rock and roll band. So just a little bit of that. You guys are kind of like soul, funk, like, not, nope, be, nope, not at all. So there's a little bit of that, but otherwise it's not, you know, we're able to get gigs just fine, and people like us, and quite naturally, just living in America, whether it's Seattle or whatever, my grandpa always told us we have to work three times as hard to be considered even equal to someone who does what we do that's white. I mean, you should put everything all of your will and everything into what you love to do anyway, but, like, we really try really hard to make good music and to perform well because we do have to stand out because there is still that mindset there. Is it shifting? Yeah, I would say it is, especially because we're trying to provide more platforms for fellow Black and brown musicians. I think the more we support each other and the more that we represent each other, then the more people will see it, will be visible, and it won't be so but black people aren't doing this. It's like, yeah, we are. We are. There's also the downside of, because a friend of mine told me that she's a black lead singer of a rock and roll band, and she said someone came up to her and was like, whoa, like, you're really good. You must not like that Eva girl from the Black Tones. And so there's also the part in the community that's like, because you're both black girls, there could only be one of you fronting a band where there's like 50 bajillion white boys doing it and they're not being pinned against each other. But, oh, you must not like Eva Walker. And she told him, like, actually, Eva's one of my best friends, actually. And so that's another problem is, like, there can only be one of us doing this, right? And that's frustrating. Just like every black musician that plays guitar is trying to be like Jimi Hendrix. It's like, no, not really. So, I mean, so there's also that as well. But also that happens with women in general because someone, a white girl that I know who's an amazing drummer, someone told her, like, or no, someone told me, they saw me play drums and they were like, wow, this drummer, I won't say her full name, but Heather, like, wow, Heather's got some competition. And I'm like, actually, Heather has taught me some of the stuff that I know. And it's kind of like, why can't we coexist? Because it's like, if you're not a white male, it's like there can only be one of you doing it. There's no room for more of you. So that's frustrating.
And you say, Cedric?
Eva kind of took the words out of my mouth in regards to the, you know, people trying to classify us as something that isn't rock and roll. We had somebody call us world rock and roll and stuff, and that was the biggest thing for me. Because then Eva and I would start joking when we go to shows. I'm like, oh, yeah, so they probably think we're going to rap or something, right? It was just kind of like, you know, for the first couple of times it happened, it's like, oh, it's okay. You know, we get it. We'll play rock and roll. But after it consistently happens, you're like, come on, you guys. Like, really? Look, that was the only thing that would bother me. But other than that, like, yeah, for the most part, I totally agree with Eva on some of the other stuff that she had nice thought of, too.
Like, this question specifically for Eva, what were those open mic sessions like before you even started the Black Tones, before you even showed your talent to your family?
They were, like, terrifying because I was new to singing and fairly new to guitar, and so it was scary, but it was for some reason easier for me to do it in front of people I didn't know because I didn't really care if they liked it or not because I was like, I won't see them again. So I would not tell people that I knew that I was going to go do it because I would have to see them again, and I would be embarrassed.
Then I guess for Cedric, what was it like seeing Eva perform for the first time?
It was mind-boggling because I was moved, but then I was also like, how could she keep this secret from me for so long? Like, it was like, there was so many emotions going through because, like, I just didn't know. You know, I didn't know, and this is, like, my twin, right? And I'm like, ah, this is crazy. Like, she's amazing. She's a beautiful singer, and, like, this people need to hear this. You know what I mean? Like, and like, I'm sure you saw, like, I told you. I was like, hey, like, how do I lift you up? You know, how do I be a part of this? How do I help you? And, you know, it took me a while to kind of find out where my role was at, and then that's when I explained to you. I was like, hey, you need to teach me how to play drums so we can do this, you know? And then, you know, Eva was like, all right, let's do it, you know? Like, I guess I caught her off guard when I told her I wanted to learn how to play drums. But, you know, like, it was something that day that I saw her do that, I knew right away. I was like, okay, this is something that needs to happen, like, because this is great, you know? Like, I was Eva's biggest fan, probably still am.
Well, I actually said this in an interview I just did yesterday. And Cedric, do not interrupt. I know you're going to be all like, oh, stop it. But this is true, and I was reflecting on this actually a few days ago. But there actually would not be the Black Tones without Cedric. Cedric is pretty much the foundation as to why this band started and why it exists. Because he was the one that initiated it, because he said, how do I invest in what you're doing? And that's what it takes for someone to be able to do what they do and to uplift someone is to have someone that invests in you. So this band would not exist if Cedric wouldn't have been like, I need to support this. And that's the history of the Black Tones.
Aww. I'll offer Cedric since you said he can do it. So, aww.
Everything is false. No kidding.
Oh, gosh. It's so true. Please. I couldn't have done this shit with friends. You need someone to invest in you. You need someone who believes in you that's, like, willing to be like, I'm going to do this. Cedric was, like, an athlete and was, like, in his thing, he saw me perform, and he was like, this is what I'm going to invest in my life. And we're almost 30 years old now. Not that you need to put that on the podcast. We're almost 30
out.
Years old now. And he could have chose to go... 27. And he could choose any path he wanted to go to. But 8 years ago, 9 years ago, almost, he decided to invest in this with me. And that is, like I said, that is the beginning of the Black Tones. If there's a Bible, that is the first page of the Black Tones Bible.
You guys have been doing this for like 8 years. What was your mindset when you first got on stage, like all that time ago? When you're just starting out, Eva literally just probably gave Cedric a drum lesson before they gave. What was it like? What's your mindset like?
Man, wow. Our first gig, I remember being like crazy nervous. And in my head, is I was just trying to keep up with Eva because I knew after watching Eva, she knew what she was doing. I was like, I'm just like looking to Eva, like, am I doing this right? You know, like, is this right? Like, I just remember being like crazy nervous.
I was still scared too. And I have the picture from our like first performance. Was that the Lucy?
Yeah, I remember that.
Since you guys have all this over the years of, like, getting gigs and first starting out, and then you having to teach Cedric the drums while you're also learning how to, like, sing and play the guitar better and better, like, what are some of the challenges, I guess, some of those failures that you learned from just trying to make it through all these years?
Like, quote-unquote, make it. I mean, it's kind of like, if you're happy and you're doing it, you've made it. Like, could be Kurt Cobain or you could be Beyonce. And there's people who are on that level that still blow their fucking brains out. So, I mean, like, quote, unquote, making it is just like, are you supporting yourself and are you happy? And, I mean, I am. And I seems like Cedric is, but I would let him answer that. So, like... As far as the only real like hiccups we've had is just like band members. And so we've kind of, what we've learned from that is that, you know what, let it just be me and you and we'll hire people to play with us.
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm going to say.
And that's why this works with like family and it's harder with like friends or whatever. So we've had members come in and out of the band and now we're just like, you know what, we started this, it's us. When we play, let's market it as us because it is us. We do all the writing. We do all the, like, structure of the songs. Like, let it be us. We'll hire people to play with us in the studio, play with us live. So we went from a 4-piece to a 3-piece to now a 2-piece with hired musicians. And if someone has an idea who's, like, not me and Cedric, it's what we, you know, we welcome it and we give credit where it's due. My fiance wrote the bass line to one of the songs that's on the record. And he gets that credit, you know what I mean? So, but like ultimately, and we have our friend Brandon play bass with us for a lot of the live shows. And he gets his credit and all that stuff and we pay him. So as far as like, as a whole, it's just me and my brother. And that's been the thing we've learned. Like, let's just keep it us so we don't have to rely on anyone else who's not in this, like, as much as we are.
And then how has your stage presence changed and grown since, like, your cutting out
members? How's our what?
Your stage presence since, like, you know, like, you say you went down from a 4-person band, so it's down to a 2-person where it's just you and Cedric now, and then... Just learning the ins and outs of the business, how you guys keep performing and doing what you love. How's your stage presence evolved and grown?
I'm like a little less scared and more excited about it.
Yeah,
I still get nervous, but a little bit, like, it's more exciting. And, like, we don't perform as a 2-piece very often because we like the bass a lot, but we do sometimes. But the band is a 2-piece. And so, but we have our third member join us live mostly, and we just, I think it's just, we have more fun on stage. I was a little, like, too serious in the beginning. I was kind of had to stick up my ass when we started. But that's just because I wanted to sound really good. And I wanted us to be the best we can be. And knowing that, you know, there was, you know, there's some, like my grandpa, like, it being ingrained, my grandpa told me, like, being three times better. So I was really, and I feel like I've learned to relax more and be, like, easier and be more, like, easier to work with. But I wasn't that pleasant in the beginning, I think.
I think you can.
So I've learned to chill.
Also, I think you can add that also to, like, through some of the challenges that we went through that we discovered, right? If you go back to the last question, like Eva, you hit the nail on the head. Like, we were very, like, it has to be like this, and that at the beginning. And then as we've grown as a band, we've learned, like, oh, actually, when we're more relaxed and we're, you know, having a good time, like, that's when we're playing at our best, you know, and, like, the crowd is really enjoying it and embracing us. And, like, so, like, I totally think that that was part of our growth for sure.
Yeah. And once you've played, like, close to fully naked, I mean, I've performed naked before, but, like, once you've performed close to fully naked to a sold-out show box, you don't really get nervous that as much anymore.
Was your mom there too when you did that?
Hell yeah, she was there.
Stage, yeah.
Oh my god, if I did that, my mom would like freak out. I'm like, the shit out of me. She's like, boy, what are you doing? Put your clothes back on.
Our mom is so supportive. I mean, of course, like, it was just supposed to be in our underwear, and then I was like, you know what, I think I'm going to wear pasties, and she was like, oh, Eva, come on, just at least keep the bra, and I was like, nah, I already bought the pasties. So she doesn't always agree with our decisions, but she's like, you know what, if they're going to do it, I'm going to support them, because she's, like, the perfect mother, so.
Yeah,
and obviously, like, she's not going to let us do anything that's going to harm us or harm anyone else, you know, and we're smarter than that. We were raised better than that. This was strictly, like, entertainment reasons. It was fun. It was safe. And so my mom was like, okay, well, if I can't change your mind, you know, she'd prefer us to have clothes on, but
yeah, but
since we weren't going to.
Yeah, so I just don't get
yeah,
hurt.
Don't,
yeah, just go. Just go free.
Yeah, don't get hurt. Don't hurt anyone. Don't hurt anyone else, you know, especially because she's very caring, and she doesn't want to hurt anyone and hurt herself. Like, so yeah.
And then I guess moving on to the third segment I have going on is where you guys have next. Like, your album's going to drop in April 12th. You guys got the opportunity to work with Jack and Dina, who produce bands like Nirvana and Soundgarden. What was just like working with them and all he could give you?
He was great. He, and I'm sure Eva was going to say this, he was probably the best, you know, recording experience we've ever had. We, you know, did a few things with some other people prior to Jack. It just always seemed stressful, and it always seemed kind of like it just wasn't quite going right. And the second we walked into the room with Jack, like, it was, you know, it was very comforting. Him and I were just talking about music and some of the things, music he was really interested in. And one of the first questions I asked him was, like, hey, what would you, you know, play at a party? And he's very straightforward. And he's a good muse for somebody who's trying to figure out what else they want to do. He's just really good at what he does, you know, and that's why he's one of the best. And I wouldn't go to anybody else.
And then how do you push you guys to get better?
By having us listen. Like, listen and experiment and add things. Like, you have this idea, let's just see what happens. Like, we took risk.
Mm-hmm.
He let us take risk, and he just has, like, this freedom of, like, let's just try this and see what it sounds like. But experimentation, I think, is the thing that, like, made us better. Because I'm like, there's all these possibilities. Because I'll go into something, and I'm very concrete about it. I'm like, this is how it's going to go. And then Jack had us add things, experiment with it. Like, let's just try it. And I think it's made me more open to just kind of getting weird a little bit and seeing what happens.
And then on top of that is, like, pinpointing those spots where to experiment at, right? So, like Eva said, let's listen to the song, you know, and then he'll key in on a spot, an area of the song, like, well, this is where we need to add, and then, like, you know, and then you're thinking, like, wait, we need to add to that, but then you know, you open your mind, and then you start throwing different things in there, and then all of a sudden you have this great thing that you didn't know you were going to come out with.
It's good to go into the studio with a structure and an idea and a song, but to keep an open mind, not to go into it so concrete. This is it. This is exactly how I want it. To not be so closed-minded about it. And Jack taught us that. Like, okay, you have this idea, but be open to other things and other possibilities for the song. And he's so humble. He's not, and all the things that he's done and the people he's worked with, level-headed, he's grounded. I mean, this is a dude who has a gold record and a platinum record. And the platinum record, the last time I was at his house, was in the freaking box still because he wanted to hang up the gold one because he thinks it's prettier. Like, this is that describes the kind of person Jack is. You know what I mean? And he's also the kind of person to just immediately give credit to the artist. He goes, you know what, I just sit behind the board and fiddle with things. He goes, it's the artist that's creating it.
Speaking of inspirations, who do you guys look to for musical brain juice or musical influences?
I mean, I have influences from, 1960s, 70s Nigerian psychedelic music to Bone Thugs and Harmony to Kraftwerk to Jimi Hendrix to U2 to things I find on YouTube on accident going down wormholes. I mean, anywhere to the wood paneling in my grandma's house.
Right.
To knowing Cedric my entire life. I have influences from everywhere. I cannot. I love the Doors. I love Doors, period. They're really cool and psychedelic. honestly, inspiration from a lot of things. if I'm being completely honest.
Yeah, I kind of echo those same sentiments. It's just like I listen to everything. I don't really, listen to one genre. I listen to rock and roll. I listen to hip-hop. I listen to R&B. I listen to old jazz. I can kind of go all over the place, and then there's a lot of music Eva's introduced me to. I didn't know anything about 70s, Nigerian rock and roll, and Eva was like, hey, you need to listen to this, and it was one of the great things I've ever heard. So, there's a lot of that for me as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of great African countries that have a lot of amazing music. Like, Mali is another country that has produced really amazing music. And I love hip hop and the bass and beat. Like, it's, oh my God, I love hip hop music. Hip hop music's great. There's also, and I want to point this out, that I like the unapologetic aesthetic of hip hop music, especially from Cardi B and Nicki Minaj and the sexiness that they put. I think that stuff is so cool, and I've incorporated some of that in just live performances. I'm like, you know what? There's nothing wrong with being sex positive, talking about your ass. There is nothing wrong with that, especially if you got it, flaunt it, whatever. And I love that stuff about the unapologeticness of hip hop music and singing about sex and all that stuff.
Connecting back to Jack and his work with you guys. What kind of themes appear in Kobe and Cornbread?
The theme of family and human, I guess protest and sex and
yeah, it covers a lot.
Yeah, it covers a lot. I mean, Ghetto Spaceship is a song about sex. It's my version of a love song. I'm not really too big on ballads. I don't really do a lot of slow songs or sad songs. I don't really write stuff like that. Ghetto Spaceship was my attempt at writing a love song, how I would try to seduce someone. And then you've got, right after that, The Key of Black, which is, very much so a protest song about the injustice that's been happening and the murders of American citizens with black skin that has been murdered with no justice from that has been served to people who are in hate groups, affiliated with hate groups, members of hate groups who disguise themselves in police uniforms, unfortunately. I know all police aren't bad. I know all of them don't identify in hate groups. I get that. And right after that, you have a song about how much I fucking hate spiders. I mean, it kind of covers everything. It covers life,
like,
yeah.
Well, scale of 1 to 10, how much do you hate spiders?
I hate them. I hate them. If I were to list them in order, it would be the Ku Klux Klan, and spiders would be right underneath it. And it's pretty bad. I can't stand those eight-legged things. And right after that, there's a song about an old middle-class store that used to be in Seattle called Chubby and Tubby. And we used to shop there a lot, get our shoes from there, tools, clothes sometimes, Christmas trees. And after that is a song, a spiritual song, that's actually a cover song called Rivers of Jordan. It's an old spiritual about, originates from singing about freedom, African slaves singing about freedom. And then we got Plaid Pants, which is a song about my grandparents, and Striped Walls, which is after that, is literally a song I wrote about a striped wall I painted in my old room at my grandparents' house that I loved and was stoned and wrote a song about it on banjo. And then it ends with Welcome, Mr. Pink, the song about my dad who was a bank robber. This album is all over the freaking place. It's about life.
And for me, some of the songs, like Striped Walls, I took it more as like I look at that song as a little more, I guess, abstract. Like, people are going to listen and they're going to draw their own conclusions, right? Obviously, Eva has her, you know, what the songs are about and stuff, but I think people are going to like it because people are going to have their own unique journey through the album, you know?
Yeah, people are going to interpret it differently, and I want people to. Actually, last night I was at a birthday party, and the guy came up to me, he said, I've seen you perform, and I really like your spider song, and he's like, what is the meaning behind that? Because I just saw a really deep meaning, like, fighting my own personal demons and blah, blah, blah. I was like, dude, I fucking hate spiders. That's all it's about. I was like, but please, please. I begged him. I'm like, please keep your own interpretation of that song. If that's what it does for you, that's great. Like, please mm-hmm. keep that interpretation. I just fucking hate spiders. He was talking about fighting personal demons and shit like that, and I was like, word. All power to you, man.
And you just thought your personal demons are just spiders.
Those are my, like, world demons. If I was queen of the world, we'd find some other way to get rid of other insects without having to have spiders around.
So is it like the size of the spider, or like what it looks like in a magnifying glass?
It's,
like, what about the spider?
It's like, it's both. They just look wrong. Like, they're like, they look like the walking, I don't like the way their legs are shaped, and they look like the walking letter M, and they're just terrible. And
the walking letter
A.
You don't like the letter M either?
I guess not. I don't know. They're just weird. And they don't look like they're supposed to just be like that. I don't know. It's just wrong, and they're terrifying. And I watched one build a web once, and I actually grew a little bit of respect for at least the webs, because I was like, sitting at the window, Cedric, this is when we were living together. I was sitting at the window mm-hmm. watching the spider build a web outside the window. And I was like, oh, that's why they have eight legs. They fucking use all eight of those goddamn legs to build those freaking webs, and they're beautiful. So I get why they have the eight legs. It's still fucking gross, and I'd rather not be around them. But I have a new respect for spider webs, and I try not to tear them down because it takes a lot of labor, and they just do it to feed themselves. And so I respect that, but we can be separate but equal.
Wow.
That's like almost the opposite of like the key of life.
Everything we just talked about.
It's like, wow. Separate but equal, wow.
That's right. When it comes to spiders, sorry. They have to go to their own schools. This is the dark part of the interview. See, I got all the phobias, because Cedric's, like, not scared of anything. Like, spiders, I'm really scared of, but, like, I have other phobias, too. But Cedric, like, I think doesn't, like, I don't like large open spaces. Like, an empty theater, you know, like, that terrifies me. Or, like, heights still scare me. And, like, large machinery. I fucking hate large machinery.
Like, I work with heavy machinery every day at work. You know, I don't know.
I have a lot of phobias. I'm
sure there's something. I just maybe haven't ran into it yet.
Yeah, everything you just described sounds like it's from a horror movie. Like, do you like horror movies at all? Like, that's really everything you just
I do like horror movies.
You described it like almost every horror movie, at least, that I've watched.
I mean, when Cedric got me my first car, and it took a while for me to open the hood to look at the engine because it scared me. Like, it terrified me.
It was, like, the smallest engine in car, probably.
It was, like, scary. I'm like, oh, my God, I cannot look at this thing. I really don't like machinery. But I got used to the engine thing, so I'm better at that. But because I have this fear of, like, a limb being chopped off or something. So it's, like, irrational, whatever.
See, but this is what makes Eva a little bit more interesting, because I'm the world's worst horror movie. You know what I mean? Like, you put me in there and people would just be like, this is boring. I'm leaving. It's not even scary. You know? Like, whereas, like, you're watching the Eva movie and you're like, oh, my God. You know, like, oh.
But it's weird because then I like other weird kind of creepy stuff, you know? Like I'm kind of interested in funeral directing and stuff like that, and working at a funeral home, and because that's intriguing to me for some reason. But, like, don't put a spider next to me.
Do you guys usually perform at smaller venues, mid-sized venues, big venues? Like, what's your typical show circuit that you perform at?
The venues have gotten bigger and bigger, but we love house shows, but we've also played the Paramount Theater, we've played the Showbox, we've played Numos, we've played the Nectar. Like I said, we'll play in people's basements. I love basement venues, so kind of just ranges, really.
But Eva definitely hit the nail on the head. We kind of play anything and everything, and that's really kind of how we started, right? I don't know. Obviously, you remember, Eva, like, we would just play pretty much everywhere. And, you know, I would have to say my favorite is definitely house shows, no doubt. But, of course, I'm not going to turn down playing the Paramount, you know, or things like that. But I enjoy playing any and everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's more about the crowd and the music than it is about the venue. I mean, people put status on venues, and it's like, you know what, if you're putting on a good show, then you could be in someone's fucking garage and still put on a killer show.
And have a great time, yeah, exactly.
There's too much of this status thing. Like, you need to get rid of this statusness. Like, okay, we played the Paramount, but you know what, I will still fucking play in someone's basement a week later. Like, who fucking, like...
Mm-hmm.
I think actually, like, a week later we played in some, or not a week later, a few months later we played in someone's backyard for a surprise party, and it was a blast. But
yeah.
Then, like, we gotta get rid of this status shit, like, you know. And actually, no, it wasn't a backyard. It was a small bar surprise. I think it was supposed to be in the backyard, and then it started raining, and it ended up being
this
place in Hillman City. Yeah, and it was like a small little, like, private cafe. For a private party, for a surprise party for someone who's, like, a friend of mine. We're a friend of their families, and we're like, sure. There's a woman we really care about who just passed away, and we're going to play at her memorial service. Like, get rid of the status shit and worry about, like, spreading art and love and music and doing it because you love doing it, not because it has to be the Paramount. Like,
mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be the Paramount. It doesn't have to be the Showbox. It's cool that those things happen, but it's like, we're not done just because we did those. Like, okay, we're done now. We played the Paramount Showbox, so I guess we've, like, succeeded everything. Like, no, we love music. So we're going to continue to play it. We played for my mom's block party on her front lawn for, like, the neighbors. That was after playing with Death Cab for Cutie. It was freaking cool.
The Paramount goes back to the front yard.
Yeah, it was great. And so if you're so focused on, if you're just so focused on the status of the venue, and, like, of course you eventually want to get into these places. Like, yeah, of course, you can set goals. But it's like, that's all you're focused on. You're not really enjoying what you're doing. It's like, what are you doing it for? We were focusing on playing anytime we had the opportunity. And you know what? It led us to the Paramount, and it led us to the Showbox. You know, we weren't like, well, let's try to get the Showbox. Like, it just led to that. You play enough times, people hear you, people like you, you'll get booked for those gigs. As Cedric always tells me, you just got to stay humble and hungry.
That pretty much wraps up the interview. Thank you guys so much for talking to me. You're really helping my podcast, my senior project.
Thanks for the interview.
Yeah, thanks for having us, for sure.
And that wraps up the episode. Thank you to my editors, Spencer Rex and Christine McManigle. Again, I want to give a huge thanks to the Blacktones for being guests on the show. Their debut album, Cobain and Cornbread, drops April 12th. Their release show is on April 11th at Chop Suey. You can buy tickets at their website, www.theblacktones.com. Follow them on Twitter, Instagram, and all forms of social media. And to close out the show, Blacktones gave me a single to premiere called Gale Spaceships. I'm your host, Niles Green. Ride the wave and let the record play.